Blog Talk Radio.
You miss me? I miss all of y'all. Hey. All y'all girls standing together like that. Keep hey. Shaking.
Tonight, this is your host in the Before You Go Pro locker room, Coach Terrence Wood, and we are ready to go tonight. We have another amazing guest coming into the locker room, Coach DJ McCarthy. Coach has so much information to share with you guys tonight, and he's somebody that was a former player at the University of Washington, actually on the national championship team there, and then now is the director of player personnel for Bethune-Cookman, a Division I AA school. He's coached at top programs like LSU, Central Florida, Nevada, and really coached some really great receivers. So there's a lot to share with you guys tonight, and I think we already have Coach on the line. So let's see if we can get Coach McCarthy in here.
Hello.
Hello, Coach. Can you hear us tonight?
Yes, sir.
Great, great. So we're pumped up to have you on because we have a whole audience of young aspiring players, parents, and coaches, and you've been through the business for a while now, so we appreciate you coming on and sharing some information with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here and spread the knowledge that I know that will help any young man or young woman to get to where they want to go and live their dream.
Perfect. So I don't want to keep you long. You are on a time difference being out in Florida with Bethune-Cookman. So let's get right into it. For those that don't know you, Coach, where are you originally from?
Well, I was born in Providence, Rhode Island, but I was raised in South Florida, Delray Beach, Boca Raton, which is down in Palm Beach County, about 20 miles north of Fort Lauderdale.
So Florida, obviously that's a talent-laden state for football. Did you feel any pressure to play football when you were growing up?
I wouldn't say pressure, but it was a rite of passage in my neighborhood. You know, we played all the sports during whatever season it was. So, you know, we played basketball, we played baseball, but definitely in the state of Florida, football was the rite of passage that you had. You had to play that sport in order to be accepted and in order to be get your stripes in the neighborhood.
I hear you, Coach. And in Boca Raton High School, were you guys a good high school as far as football, or were you guys kind of on the lower end of the pack?
Well, when I was there, it was one of the biggest schools in the state. We were, at that time, a 5A school, which was the top. Now the state of Florida goes up to 8A. So we had about 3,500 to 4,000 students. And, you know, we were a powerhouse. We was 8-2. We missed the playoffs by one game, which we would have played Dillard High School, which had, at that time, 17 Division I players get scholarships that year. So we ended up with about eight guys getting scholarships at Boca High that year in 89 graduating class.
Wow, that's amazing. And when you were there, Coach, were you a three-sport star, two-sport star, or did you concentrate on football?
Well, I was a two-sport star. You know, basketball and football were my sports. I tried to play a little baseball, but our shortstop ended up going to the Major League Baseball, so he and I played the same position. I got kind of disgruntled and focused more on the other two sports and ended up running a little track and doing some long jump and that type of stuff.
Gotcha. And then, correct me if I'm wrong, Coach, but did you have a short stint in junior college?
I did. I was a 5'6", 155-pound option quarterback that played corner as well. So, you know,
okay.
The University of Miami, Florida State wasn't looking for a guy like me, so I had to go off to junior college. I did that for a year and a half and got my AA degree and then was able to move on to the University of Washington, where I played there, graduated, and won a couple of Rose Bowl and the national championship.
I'm glad you brought that up, Coach, the not being recruited really out of high school, but choosing to go to junior college and still pursue your dream. Did you have any doubters, or were people telling you to just still keep playing football?
Well, number one, my mother, Alberta, she believed in me, so she was backing me whichever direction I wanted to go. But, there was a lot of doubters. I mean, there's not a lot of 5'6", 155-pound Division I wide receiver option quarterbacks or corners in college football. So, you know, even my head coach at that time, who was Brian Van Gorder, who's now the defensive coordinator with the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, you know, his thing was like, hey, you know, you need to get bigger. So, you know, go to the service, get bigger, and then come back and go to college after that. But my thing was I had a dream and I had a goal that I wanted to accomplish. And I was going to fight for that dream and make it happen. And, you know, through some adversity, overcoming some things, and having coaches give me an opportunity, we was able to make it happen.
And you definitely did make it happen to get Washington's attention at a time where the University of Washington was very talented. Talk to us a little bit about the choice to go to UW. What was it that made you hang your hat with the Huskies?
Well, it was a long about. You know, my first year at Long Beach, I was a backup option quarterback. We ran the VAR option there in Long Beach City. Then the second year, we threw the ball a little more, so I ended up moving to receiver. And, you know, I had a couple of scholarship offers to come back to the state of Florida, at Central Florida, Bethune-Cookman, FAM, and Bowling Green, Ball State. But, my goal was I wanted to play Division I ball. I wanted to play big-time Division I ball. I wanted my mom to be able to see me on ESPN. And I wanted an opportunity to live a dream of playing in a bowl game. So I turned down some of those scholarships, and I went and walked on at the University of Washington, ended up earning a scholarship, and got a chance to play, you know, big time, what I considered to be big time ball, and being on Rose Bowl team and catch some balls and make some plays. So, I mean, that was my journey. My goal was to be a Division I, 10 SEC, ACC player, and whoever gave me the opportunity to live that dream, that's where I went.
And you were actually second in touchdown receptions when you finished up at Washington. Did you expect to have that type of success, or was that a surprise a little bit?
I never doubted my ability. All I needed was an opportunity. I always prepared myself. They say success comes when opportunity meets preparation. So I was always prepared for the opportunity. And my first college catch came from, I was on the sideline tuned in, and one of the players, Joe Krawlik, ran a deep route, limped off the field. And, you know, I knew the next play was in. I ran in there, and it was against Stanford. I caught my first pass. So, you know, I was always prepared. I never doubted my ability, and I just was waiting for the opportunity.
What do you that's a good point, Coach, as far as being prepared and when the opportunity comes. Was that something that was natural for you, or did your parents or a mentor teach you that, to be prepared like that?
Well, that definitely came from my mother. You know, she always instilled in me. You know, she was a single parent that raised four kids on her own with a little help from her my godmother and my godfather, who you know, the extended family. But you know, her thing was always that, you know, you always got to be ready. You know, if you fail to prepare, then you prepare to fail. So she always had those little sayings and cliches, and she instilled it in us four kids. And, you know, we all were able to tap in on our talents and be successful.
Great point, Coach. Now, when you were in college, and this is something that, because we do have kids at the collegiate level and high school, but when you were at the University of Washington, did you feel like it really sunk into you, the value of that college opportunity?
There's no doubt. You know, you know, I had all the statistics about, you know, what a high school graduate will make, what a college graduate will make, you know, someone with a master's degree, what they can make, you know. So, you know, at that time, college coaches weren't making the type of money that they were making and that we're making now. But to me, you know, that was my passion. That was my joy to you know, teach others and learn as much as I could and get that information and help others become the person that they want to become or the player they want to become. So, you know, I knew in order to do that, I had to go to college.
Great point, Coach. And for those that are just tuning on with us tonight in the locker room, we have Coach DJ McCarthy. He's currently the Director of Player Personnel at Bethune-Cookman, a Division I AA school, and he's granting us some of his wisdom and time tonight. So we appreciate it, and we do have a call-in number, 310-807-5195, if you have a question for Coach. So you almost dove right into coaching as soon as your playing career was over. I know you played some pro ball, but as soon as you were done, you got into coaching. Did you know as you were playing that was something you were going to do, or did that dawn on you after you hung up your cleats?
Well, all my mentors growing up were coaches. My Pop Warner coach, Walt Stevens, my high school coach, Brian Van Gorder, and I actually had two high school coaches. I was very fortunate. And Rod Montgomery was my first coach, and then Brian Van Gorder took over our senior year. And then my junior college coach, Will Shaw, who's still a mentor to me. I don't make a move. Before I married my wife, before I take a job, I always tap in and talk with him. And then, you know, of course, the great Don James, that has been a great mentor for me before he passed away. So I knew coaching is what I was going to do. And my receiver coach, my senior year, who was Dick Beard, you know, we had two electrifying freshmen, and Dick was not a receiver guy. He was a linebacker guy that got thrown over to the receivers. And, you know, he put the onus on me and Damon Berry to teach those young guys what they need to do so they can get on the field. So my coaching career started my senior year at Washington. And then, you know, when I left Washington, I was playing arena ball down in Miami and went back to my alma mater at Boca High and walked on the field and told the coach, hey, I make money playing arena ball. I just want to be out here and, you know, and serve my community in my high school. And, you know, 20 years later, here we are.
You said still going strong, huh, Coach?
Still going strong.
Definitely. Well, obviously, you're talented. You were talented as a player, a receiver at Washington, but also talented as a coach because you've been with the best and on some of the best coaching staffs. What can you tell us about today's recruiting game that maybe a parent doesn't know, something maybe that you didn't have to go through during your recruiting process that's going on today?
Well, first of all, there's no excuse for a parent not knowing what's going on. There's so much information out there via the internet, via the websites, via recruiting websites. I mean, there's so much information out there for them, you know, via the NCAA website. I mean, they got this new 2.3 or take a knee. And all that information is out there for them, you know, the 16 core classes that the kids have to have, the 2.3 GPA, the English and math that they have to take, the curriculum. It's there's so much information out there. And if a parent can get on the computer and click it three times, and they'll get all the information that they need to know for the academic and the athletic side. The one thing I always tell parents is be involved. Don't leave your kid's future up in someone else's hands. I mean, that's not fair to the kid that, you know, that you've raised for the last 17 or 18 years. So, you know, make sure you're involved. Talk to the high school coach. Talk to the college coaches who are calling in. And one of the things I do when I'm recruiting, you know, I always ask the kid, well, who's recruiting you from XYZ University? Or who's talking to you? And when I get on the phone with the parents, well, hey, you got someone calling your son every day or your daughter every day, every other day, every week. And does he ever talk to you, or does she talk to you? I mean, if they're just recruiting your kid and they're not recruiting the family or the parent of that kid, then something's wrong.
Good point, Coach. Good point. And you actually hit upon something with the 2.3. That's the core course GPA, which is going up from 2.0. And then I know that the SAT, ACT scores have to correlate with that. Do you think that the NCAA, Yeah, is the NCAA, in your opinion, raising that GPA because they want a better student athlete at the universities? As far as
no.
a more serious. Okay, go ahead.
No, no, I actually wrote my senior thesis on Proposition 48, which was it was Prop 48 back in the early 90s, and I really believe that you can kids learn different ways. You know, I was a 2.4, 2.5 student coming out of high school. You know, high school wasn't as important academically to me as athletics, and I learned different. So by the time I got to college, I mean, I went from a 2.5 to a 3.2 in junior college to a 2.8 at the University of Washington, which is one of the top flagship schools in America, but because of the way they taught and the way I learned. You know, you try to put all these students in this box. You know, here in Florida we have what's called the FCAT, and I know the state of California they have a standardized test, and I know in Texas they have it. And everyone teaches towards that test, and some people are not great test takers. Some people are better writers. Some people are audio learners. Some people need to speak it. So everyone learns different ways. So to say that everyone has to learn this certain way and we're going to judge you on learning this way, I really think is unfair because you're not reaching the masses. You know, you're just putting everyone in a box and having a standard test or a standard way of doing it, and you end up missing out on some people because they learn differently.
Definitely. As far as kids taking the test, the SAT, ACT, when do you recommend that the best time for them to take the test?
Honestly, I think at the end of their sophomore year, maybe the spring of their sophomore year, they should start with the PSAT. And then beginning of their junior year, they should go ahead and try to tag in or dip into that that SAT, ACT, if they feel they're ready. As you know, some people are a little further behind as far as their math or their English is. And if you go and you take that SAT and you get like a 16 or 17 the first time, then you go through and you actually take a college algebra or geometry and you take that test again, and now your test goes from a 16, 17, you jump up to a 19 or 20, well, now your test gets flagged. So, you know, you got to make sure you're ready for the test. You got to make sure you're taking tutoring. It's everything, all that stuff out there. You can take the practice test online. And again, there's so much knowledge out there for kids and parents and coaches that there's no excuse for when I come into a school and I'm going to recruit a junior in spring recruiting that the kid doesn't even know he's supposed to register with the clearinghouse or he hasn't taken a test yet or, you know, he doesn't know about the core courses. There's no reason for them not to know.
Is that a little bit of a red flag for you if a kid doesn't have those things taken care of?
It's a bit of a red flag, but, you know, for me, I use that as a recruiting advantage because now I'm going to give him that knowledge that other recruiters didn't give him or their high school coach or counselor weren't able to give him. And now, hey, I'm giving you this information. So as the person that's giving you this information, getting you going, you know, there's a bit of loyalty on both ends. And I think it helps me in recruiting.
Great point, Coach. Now, throughout the years, I mean, you've been at UCLA, you've been at Nevada, Central Florida, and LSU, to name a few, and you've really coached some amazing wide receivers. Brandon LaFell, Nate Burleson, and Brandon Marshall gives you a lot of credit for his development as well. When you coach a superstar or a highly talented player, a driven player, is that something that's easy for you to notice right away, Coach, or does it take time to notice that?
Well, they say it's a gift. I have a gift that what I can see in people or players that other people can't see. And the things that I see, it's my job as a coach to get it out of them. It's amazing what happens to an athlete, a kid, a student, when they find someone that believes in them and can get that talent out of them. And you know, a kid, you know how it is. Kids don't care how much you know till they know how much you care. So, you know, with the Brandon Marshall and Nate Burleson, the early Doucette, I mean, there's 22 guys that are in the NFL that I've worked with, and you know, they've been just as big a blessing to me as I've been to them. So my thing is I try to tap into them holistically. You know, I want to know about the family. I want to know, you know, the third kid of four boys. I mean, what makes them tick? You know, what pisses them off? What pushes their buttons? What makes them happy? I dive into all those things. because at certain times you have to push those buttons. Other times you have to turn the switch off because they get too hyped. And those star athletes and those guys, I mean, they have this talent, and they have to allow you to tap into that thing to get it out of them. And you have to show them that you believe them. You have to show them that you have the knowledge. You have to show them that you care. And then you have to give them, once they get all that, now you got to come with the knowledge that's going to help them get better as an athlete, as a student, make more money in the NFL, you know, have a life after the NFL. So, I mean, I tap into all those things. So I think that's where my strength and my skill comes in as a coach and as a man.
Great point. And those are the best coaches, the coaches that can reach the kids on a personal level. And you've obviously done that because everybody that's played for you is loving you. Tell us a little bit, Coach, about maybe the kid who drops a couple balls and now he's on the bench, or somebody else is getting more targets than he is or more reps than he is. From a coaching standpoint, what can a kid do to get back in good grace with the coach?
Work. You got to grind. There's no substitution for grinding and working hard. And this is a performance-based business. Whether, you know, you're getting your grades, whether you're in the workforce, you know, football is performance-based. And when you're talking about wide receivers, I mean, you got to block, you got to run the right route, you got to catch balls. And if you're not doing those things, then my job is to find the guy that's going to push you to do it better or that can do it better than you. So those guys who are having problems, the one thing I always do is I stay away from the negative. And when I coach, I kind of coach in a sandwich type of coaching. So I'm going to tell you something good. Hey, good route. Then I'm going to tell you what was bad about it. Hey, you dropped the ball. And then the last thing I'm going to have on the bottom is something positive. So, hey, that was a good route. I know you dropped the ball, but, hey, that was really a good route. Next time, use your hands this way. Or, you know. So I always try to end it with something positive. Start positive, give them what they need to work on, then end positive. Because people listen twice as much as the bad stuff as they do the good stuff. So in order to balance it off, you got to give them twice as much of the good stuff.
Fabulous info, Coach. We really appreciate that. That's something that we'll keep in mind as well. You have to give the kids the good stuff and balance it out with the bad stuff. So
yeah.
That's amazing, Coach. Now talk to us a little bit about the decision to switch from receiver coaching to player personnel. What do you like about the director of player personnel title and job that you don't get coaching at receiver?
Well, number one is I get to interact with all the players on the staff. I mean, all of them. So, you know, I'm not just with the 10 to 15 receivers. Now I'm with the 8 corners. I'm also with the 7 safeties. I'm also with the 13 defensive linemen. I'm also with the 18 offensive linemen, the quarterbacks. I get to interact with them all. And my goal is to be a head coach. So when my head coach here, Brian Jenkins, and I sat down, he's like, hey, I got this young guy I want to bring back. I'm going to put him at receiver. I know you want to be a head coach. So, you know, I'm involved in every day. I'm involved in FCA Bible study. I'm involved with the academics. I run the study hall. I do the class checks. I'm out there at practice. You know, I'm getting the calls. Hey, this person's grandma passed away. Or so I'm dealing with all the kids. And I'm dealing with all the different issues that go on with the kid from and compliance and the EAD and the financial people. So it's really given me an opportunity to better prepare myself to be a head coach, to know the whole thing about how a program runs, and it also gives me opportunity to work with each kid, you know, all 105 kids on our team.
Wow, that's amazing, and I know you're going to be a great head coach because you've definitely worked your way up the ranks. So since you are getting a little taste of what all the kids go through and just kind of the inner workings of how to run a football team at the Division I level, what would you say, Coach, about a player that comes to school as a freshman and you see that he's ready to compete as a freshman? What type of things does that type of kid have in place as opposed to the kid who may struggle?
Well, number one is talent. I mean, there's no substitute for talent, and that's the first thing that's going to get you on the field or get you noticed. The next thing is going to be that being able to grasp the knowledge of the playbook and knowing what to do and being able to do the little things. you know, when I was recruiting, you know, five-star athletes, Justin Hunter, you know, out of Virginia Beach when I was at LSU, or Mike Davis out of Texas, and, you know, hey, well, I want to come and play right away. And my question was, all right, go out there right now and run double wing right, freaking scat left, you know, I call out a play. And it's like, well, I don't know that. Well, yeah, you're right. You don't know it. So you got to know that before you can get on the field. Yes, you're a 7-foot high jumper. Yeah, you run a 4-3, all that. But if you don't know where to line up, you don't know how to run your route. You don't know how to adjust your route. You don't know how to catch. I mean, there's so much you need to learn in order to get on the field. And I was, you know, I was able to get Reuben Randall on the field the first snap of the first game against University of Washington because he was bright enough to learn it. You know, he would come down and meet with me in the off season during spring and during the summer. And he, you know, he had that grind mentality of I was going to learn it. And I was going to get on the field. Well, if you don't do that, if you're not willing to work, you just rely on your athletic ability. Eventually, it's going to catch up with you because everyone else is on scholarship as well. Those DBs are on scholarships, those receivers are on scholarship, and just think about it. You're a true freshman, 17, 18-year-old kid coming in, and here's this fifth-year senior who's 23-year-old young man who's been through the system for the last 4 years. Well, he has the advantage knowledge-wise, so how do you expect just to come and beat him out?
Exactly. And we're going to let you go here soon, Coach. You just got about
not a
one
problem.
More question to go, and we really appreciate this because this is some great info for the kids and parents. As far as kids burning through opportunities, we see it in the NFL. We also see it at the college level. What do you attribute that to? Is that kids not being prepared socially, or is that kids just thinking that they're bigger than the law, kind of their ego plan coming into play? What do you attribute that to?
You hit every point, and it's a combination of a lot of things. I think, number one, society does a disservice to these kids. You know, I got three boys, Guy, Nate, and Dylan, 14, 10, and 8, and they're playing Pop Warner ball here in Port Orange with the Port Orange Hawks. And I'm listening to the coaches and the parents, and, I mean, I'm listening to my son who's an 8-year-old, and he's on an 8-year-old, 8- to 10-year-old team. And you got parents out there already telling their 8-year-old kid that they're going to go to the NFL and take care of their mother. I mean,
wow.
I was blown away when I heard that. And then, you know, you got coaches hollering and screaming like it's the end-all to be-all to win this game instead of developing the kids and getting them better and having fun out there. Society's killing it with all this social media. You know, you got these guys announcing on TV that they're going to this school or that school, and they're pulling out these hats, and they're being made into these superstars before they even do anything. I mean, Les Miles, I worked with at LSU, and he called the running back Michael Jordan. I mean, what are you telling the kid, and how do you humble him? I mean, we always had this saying, when you recruit a kid, once you get on the campus, now you got to de-recruit him because of the mentality and all the love that you gave him while you were recruiting him. So now you got to humble him once he gets there, or he, you know, he's going to get humbled by the upperclassmen. And, you know, society's killing them as well. But, you know, and this one's near and dear to my heart. I mean, you think about it, 60% of the kids that are going to college and playing college athletics are coming from a single-parent home. So, you know, we have 105 kids, and we travel to a game, and, you know, we wear suits and ties to a game. And, you know, of the 60 guys who are traveling, you know, 5 to 10 of them don't know how to tie a tie. And they don't learn that until they get to college, and a college coach takes them under their wing, you know, or high school coach. So, I mean, there's so much in the society that's wrong that are warping these kids' sense of reality. And that, I mean, that, stuff like that really blows me away. You know, we have these team dinners, and the kids don't know which fork to use or the drinks to the right or, you know, where to put the napkin when they take it off the table. Just, I mean, we're not those old-fashioned values of opening the door for a woman or don't sit down until she sits down to eat. I mean, we're losing all that, the sagging of the pants and the rap video. And I always say garbage in, garbage out. So if you listen to all that stuff going in, well, that's the stuff that's going to come out. And, you know, just those are the things that I think are really hurting the young people of today, boys and girls. Because, you know, I hear it from the girls just as much as I hear it from the guys. And just, you know, I think the parenting is different. You know, we got parents that want to be their kid's friend instead of being their kid's parent. So I can go on and on forever about that. You know, as 20 years seeing the evolution of college and recruiting and how things have changed and young people have changed in the last 20 years that I've been in coaching, I mean, those are the things that stand out to me you know, the single parent home, you know, the mother working two jobs to try to make it her. There's no home supervision. The type of music that they're listening to, you know, the relationship with the parents and the kid, the relationship with the coaches and the kid, the social media, all the hype that's put out in this recruiting, you know, it's big money business, so it's not going to stop anytime soon. It's just up to us as coaches and parents to, you know, hone in and really keep our kids humble and keep them with level heads.
That's amazing, Coach. And I really hope that you young kids out there are listening, because this is somebody that is where you want to be. You know, he's the director of player personnel for a Division I school. He's where you want to be. So you have to heed advice to what he's telling you works and what doesn't work. And I'm really hoping that sinks in for you guys. Last question tonight, Coach, and once again, we appreciate your time so much. But this plays along with what you're talking about right now. You said 60% of the kids that you guys have up there, and that's a national stat anyway, so single-parent homes. And these kids are having the opportunity to go to a multi-million-dollar college and pursue sports and education. Do you think that there are enough athletes that are networking and leveraging their way for success on and off the field, or are they solely thinking about the NFL and football?
Oh, man, this is – I think they are totally off point, because every kid thinks they're going to the NFL. And, you know, I do some work with Chris Carter in the off-season, training guys to get ready for their combine prep and get ready for the pro guys to get ready to go back to camp. And he just got elected to the Hall of Fame last year. And he said something that I will never forget. You know, we talked about it. It's like, man, you're going to the Hall of Fame. He's like, man, DJ, I know. He said, I'm a one percenter. I was like, what? He said, think about it. I'm 1% of 1% of 1% of 1%. I'm 1% of the high school kids that get a Division I scholarship. I'm 1% of the college kids that get a chance to go play in the NFL. I'm 1% of the NFL players that made it to the Hall of Fame. So for you guys to think that everyone's going to the NFL, you're 1% of 1%. And that, I mean, that's the odds are astronomical. I mean, it's really not going to happen. You know, when my sons talk about playing in the NFL, you know, I have to bite my tongue because I don't want to crush their dreams. But the reality is, you know, your mother is 5'4", your dad's 5'7", 5'8", and unless you got, you know, some type of growth spurt, you're not going to be more than 5'9", 5'10". So, you know, just by numbers and statistics, you're not going to make it there. But and what happens is the kids, and Ricky Williams said it best, the running back from Texas, end up going to Miami, the Dolphins and the Saints and the Dolphins. But he said it best, and people kind of snuck at him. But they asked him, well, if you had to do it all over again, what would you do different? And he said, I wouldn't go to the NFL. What do you mean? You could have made millions and this and that. You made millions. And he said, well, listen, I was at the University of Texas. I was at a university where they had president's kids. I had people from other countries, princes and kings' kids that were at my university. I could have went anywhere and made millions of dollars just from, you know, my college experience. So I really think all student athletes really missed the mark of getting the network with the people who are going to help them when athletics is over. I mean, you've got to do internships during the summer or during the spring. You've got to meet that person that's in class that can help you, who may be a CEO or parents may. I mean, you just got to network. And what happens is all those student athletes, when they go out to get jobs, they come back to the professors or a coach to get a resume, you know, get a letter of reference. But they haven't spent the time to really get to know that person and how they could have helped them while they still were in school. I mean, I look at Enterprise, and Enterprise does a great job of getting ex-student athletes to run their companies, because they know that, number one, they know dedication, they know about hard work, they know about sacrifice. And right now, Enterprise is probably the number one rent-a-car company in America because of the student athletes that they instill and they put in that program. So, to answer your question, I think we don't do a great job as coaches and as student athletes or parents to make sure our kids are well-rounded and taking advantage of what's out there for them while they're still playing.
Amazing job, Coach, and you just laid it all on the table tonight. We really appreciate it. I know the kids and parents got a lot out of tonight's show, and we wish you guys the best of luck with the rest of the season. Thank you for coming on.
I appreciate that, man. Bethune-Cookman plays Thursday night on ESPNU. You guys come check us out, and if I can ever be any help in the future, let me know. I'm just here. I'm blessed so I can be a blessing to others.
Will do, Coach. Well, we'll check Bethune-Cookman out, and we'll be in contact because we love the content. We love your advice. So we'll be in contact with you, Coach. Have a great evening.
I appreciate your time, Terrence.
All right. So there you guys have it. That was Coach DJ McCarthy, an amazing man, an amazing coach, was a pretty good player as well. And you guys got to hear from him firsthand about what it's like to play at the Division I level, but not only that, what colleges are looking for in players and what you guys need to do, not only to be successful on the field, but also off the field. He also said, parents, you guys got a big hand in your child's success. If your parents are busy and they work a million jobs just to put food on your table, or maybe you have a guardian that can't always be there with you, you have to find like-minded people. You have to find a coach that's willing to support you, a company like Before You Go Pro, that's willing to support you, somebody that can have your back and get you where you want to go. So hopefully you guys got something out of tonight's show. We will be back on Thursday with another great guest. We're actually bringing on a lawyer so we can talk about some legal things that you guys need to be aware of. So for Before You Go Pro and the rest of the Before You Go Pro team, I am Coach Terrence Wood signing off tonight. You guys have a wonderful night. See you at the top.